It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Bolfazer.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to The Scoop. We're back with our next summer episode. Kyle Gauss is with me, Matt Vender's with me, and we have a special in-studio guest, and by in-studio I mean we're sitting in my office recording this. Sharif Finch, what do you think of the palatial, luxurious AlScoop.com studios here?
It's pretty nice, pretty luxurious.
He's being kind.
I like it.
It's basically just walls with posters and bobbleheads and stuff like that. So Sharif Finch, Temple's defensive end, is with us today, kind enough to join us on The Scoop. Glad to have you on the show. Just a basic question. How are you feeling right now? Obviously, you played in four games last year, took the medical red shirt. Mm-hmm. You've dealt with knee pain and stuff like that. I know you said last week at Media Day this is as good as you felt in a long time. How are you feeling, and what have you done since then to kind of just manage that injury and get to where you're feeling right now?
Yeah, I'm feeling great. This is the best I've felt at Temple since I got here. Mm-hmm. You know, I've gained a lot of weight, you know. I've gotten bigger and stronger. You know, I've cut a lot of fat, so I think that really helped me with my injury situation. But yeah, I'm feeling great, you know. So I'm just ready to get after it.
And you've had two knee surgeries, two arthroscopic procedures. Yeah. Had your operated on back in 2015. Do you have like a natural pain tolerance now? Are you kind of just almost immune to it since you've dealt with so many injuries? And does that date back to high school?
No. I don't have an extensive like injury history back to high school. You know, when I got here, it's probably like my first injury situation. But yeah, football is 100% injury rate. You know, everybody's gonna get banged up. You know, so it's just part of the game, and you just got to deal with it, take care of your body. So, yeah, I'm feeling great now.
You've been here for, obviously, this is going to be, you're a redshirt senior now. One thing you've kind of set yourself apart from, you're the NCAA's leading leader in blocked field goals, blocked punts. Is there a knack to that? Is there a technique? Is it just aggression? What kind of leads to that production?
Yeah, I would say there is a technique, but I can't give it away. Yeah, because if I told you, everybody would know, you know. Well, you know, we see something, and, you know, we'll attack it. They'll send me through the middle, off the edge. You know, we got other guys that can do the same thing. You know, so we have a technique. You know, we have a plan going into the game. And if we see opportunity to execute it, we're going to do it, you know. So yeah, there's a science.
All right, so I want to ask you about one of the more famous plays in your career here, the interception against Penn State. This is low tech for our listeners here, and obviously you can't see this, but we got this queued up on the computer here in the office. So this is Sharif's interception of Christian Hackenberg, and this was maybe arguably the biggest play of the game. It's 10-10 in the third quarter at this point. You pick him off and pass he threw out in the flat. So we're going to cue this up for you and watch it again, pretty straightforward, and then I want you to tell us what you saw there, because this really turned the game around here. So, again, we'll play this here and have you talk about it.
Okay.
Temple yourself. Intercepted. It could be a pick six. It's on the 5-yard line right at the pylon. It's Sharif Finch. He's in for the touchdown.
Which we thought.
Yeah.
The runner was down with the ball at the 2-yard line.
My first question for you here, do you think you were in?
Yeah, I actually thought I was in. What I saw was basically we had soft corners on the ends. So basically the easy access pass was the hitch. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had to drop under the hitch, so I delayed it a little bit because the previous play he had thrown the same hitch, so I knew he was coming back to it. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like baited him into it. And I think I got pretty good hands. So I put my left hand out there, got it. You know, and I'm running, and I see Hackenberg to the right, so I'm angling towards, like, the pylon, and I feel like I got it. Like, I'm not even running hard. I'm about to walk in the end zone. But I didn't realize, like, the receiver was, like, basically on the sideline. Uh-huh. So I basically ran right in front of him, you know, and messed my angle up. So then he ended up catching me, and I was upset. But, yeah, it's a pretty good play. Probably the biggest play I've had here.
I know you guys are conditioned, obviously, to, like, I mean, even last year and even later on that season, it was like, yeah, we beat Penn State, but we expected to beat them. You don't want to keep looking back. But that play was huge. That game was huge because ever since you've been here, you were part of, you know, short of the Al Golden turnaround era, you were part of the big turnaround here. Yeah. What did that game mean to you guys? What did that win mean for the program? Mm-hmm. And even just on a basic level, that defensive line you guys owned him in that game. Sacked him 10 times. Hassan told me, he's like, I could hear him screaming at his offensive lineman. How much fun was that just to really own a program like that and dominate them in the second half and win that game?
Well, they say that was like the first win in about 74 years, you know, so just getting that one for the fans meant everything to us. And it was the beginning of something special. That 2015 team was something very special, you know. Even later on in the season, having game day, bringing that to Philly for the first time. Yeah, just experiencing that and selling out the link, like, that was a special experience. Mm-hmm. And that was one of my favorite experiences here at Temple.
Now, you still have, obviously, another year of eligibility here at Temple, but you've already earned your degree in communications. You seem pretty comfortable in this setting. Yeah. Is that something, you know, you're hoping to get into, and if the NFL, you know, isn't what works out for you?
Yeah, well, the good thing about communications is you communicate in every field. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a broad spectrum of things you can do. Media is definitely something I'm considering, you know, but, like, my passion is helping people. So if I can be in a position where I can help people use my degree, that's what I want to do.
Now, you mentioned the last time you played Notre Dame here at the Link College game. The first time you played Notre Dame, first game of your college career. We were actually, just coincidentally, I found the depth chart for that Notre Dame game like a couple days ago.
Yeah.
You're listed as the backup Sam linebacker there, 218 pounds.
Yeah.
Just kind of compare where you were then going in your first games at South Bend to where in a couple of weeks you're going to be going back there again, a little bit heavier, a little bit more experienced.
Yeah.
Just the difference between as a freshman and now.
I mean, my first game, I was, you know, 17 years old, true freshman, wide-eyed. I didn't know what was going to happen. Notre Dame had just come off the national championship against Alabama. So, like, that was the last game I saw, and that's when I didn't know what college I was going to. So just being there, it was kind of, like, overwhelming a little bit. I didn't know I was going to play. One of the same linebackers got hurt in the first quarter, so it was like they just threw me out there, you know. So, yeah, it was a little different. Like, the game was faster then, you know. I didn't know it as much as I do now, obviously. But now it's, you know, I approach every game like it's the same game, you know. No stage is too big. So I would say the biggest difference is being bigger and stronger and just being more prepared to play against these guys. I'm not the young guy no more. I'm the old guy, you know. So it's like I'm pretty much prepared for anything.
And just a general question for you before we get into some of the reader questions we got here from Twitter and from our message boards. You played your first 4 years here with Matt Rhule. Jeff Collins comes in. Yeah. From where we sit, and we go to a spring practice or something like that, obviously I'm sure Jeff has made his own changes, and with the exception of Ed Foley, Chris Weasehand, a couple of the other guys, it's a mostly new staff. But still looks similar, that the practices are up-tempo, there's hitting, there's music.
Yeah.
What feels a little different, and are other things just not as much, have there not been as many changes because Jeff tried to keep the same vibe going?
Well, one thing about Coach Collins is he's a player's coach. Mm-hmm. The players are behind him. He knows how to get his players ready to play the game, you know. And guys love Coach Collins, you know, and honestly, his relationship with Matt Rhule, I don't know if many people know this, but if you dated back to, like, Western Carolina, they were on the same staff. Like, him and Matt Rhule are, like, great friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that big of a change. You know, because he comes from the same type of culture as Matt Rhule comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he knows how to win. He comes from a defensive-minded team just like we do. So it wasn't that big of a difference for us, you know. He just brings a different energy. It's just a little different vibe from him opposed to from Matt, you know. But we're going to be fine.
What's the different vibe? What do you mean?
You know, like, Coach Rhule was a little, I don't know, how do you say it, like, more of an old-time coach, kind of. I don't know. It's like Coach Collins is more like tuned towards the new school.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's more geared towards the fun of the game.
Were you guys relieved? Obviously, like every year, like if you have a coach here, people are like, "Oh, he could leave." When it finally happened, Matt goes to Baylor.
Yeah.
What's that like when you guys are kind of anxious and sitting around? And did you feel relieved when you guys started looking up Jeff and saying, "Oh, he's friends with Matt"? What was that process like?
It was a real awkward process, I'll say, but everybody on the team, we were really happy for Coach Rhule, him getting that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's a business. We understand it's a business. And when other opportunities come, you know, you may or may not take them. You know, so, I mean, we were happy for him. Getting Coach Collins was the perfect fit. So, like, it was a weird transition where it was like, who's going to be the coach? But once we got Coach Collins and we realized he brought the same things to the table, we were fine. We were comfortable.
Taking it down one level, just with your position coach, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He kind of recruited the area in high school. I'm not sure if he necessarily recruited you, but with Jim Panagos, kind of just what's the relationship been like with him? He seems like they're a very intense guy.
Oh, Coach P? We love Coach P. Coach P is a high-energy guy. Coach P is a great coach. Back in 2009 with UCF, he was Coach of the Year, National Coach of the Year, D-line. So, yeah, having that experience, you know, having a guy like Coach P around, you know, it makes it easier, especially for the older guys, just being comfortable with Coach P and knowing he has the experience under his belt and he's been successful in the past. It's easy, like, just listen to him, we're going to be good.
Again, Sharif Finch with us here on The Scoop. Got some questions from our readers on Twitter and from the message board. First one comes from Stephen Kutcher, coming in hot with questions he probably can't answer here. But who's your starting quarterback on September 2nd, and who is going to have more wins this year, Temple or Baylor? So I guess you're not going to predict who the starting quarterback is because you probably don't know, but maybe you can use this as an opportunity to maybe see, to talk to us about. Granted, preseason practice hasn't started yet, but maybe what you saw of the four guys. I know you weren't a full practice participant. Maybe talk to us about what you saw from the four guys and what it's like now, because for the past 4 years, it was PJ's job and he had it really locked down. What have you seen from the quarterbacks if you don't know who the starter's going
to
be?
Well, the juniors, you know, they got the opportunity to learn from PJ. PJ's one of the most talented players I ever played with. So, like, coming up, you know, we got the two juniors, so we're in the beginning, we're thinking, okay, maybe it's between them two. You know, you got Frank Nuttall, you got Logan Marchi, and it's like maybe them two. Then you see a young guy like Russo. Russo steps up, and he's playing great. Now it's like, wow, we got three pretty good quarterbacks. And then the young guy comes in, Todd Senteo, and he's playing good too. So now it's up in the air. Like, we don't have a definitive quarterback. Mm-hmm. But one thing I would say is that they all push each other. They're all playing pretty well right now. So, it should be interesting.
It's just a follow-up. In your eyes, you're on the other side of the ball. If you're thinking of, okay, like the guy who's going to start for us at Notre Dame, which is tough because all four of these guys, now Frank and Logan have experience, but none of them have started a game before. It just is what it is. Mm. You know from previous experience going into that atmosphere, it's tough. Yeah. The guy who's going to start at Notre Dame has to do what? What sort of command does he have to? What, in your eyes, what does that guy have to start that game?
I would say poise and maturity. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing going into an atmosphere like Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Like, they sell out their crowd. That's 80,000 people screaming at your face, you know. So, like, it can be a little chaotic at times, but if you're able to weather the storm and stay poised, I think that'd be the most important trait, being a quarterback in Notre Dame.
You want to take a crack at this one? More wins this year, Temple or Baylor?
I'm not going to touch on that one. But I would say that Matt Rhule is a pretty good coach, and he knows what he's doing, so I'm pretty sure they'll be good this year. And I'm pretty sure that we should be fine as well.
Mm-hmm. Next question, sort of a fun one. This guy from Real Getsky on Twitter. What would your guys' commitment graphics look like? I guess he's asking us this question. And what are some of the best graphics you've seen done throughout the Temple fan base? This can include anything from the swag coordinator, our good friend Dave Gerson, or anything on social media you've seen. This can include Sharif as well for what he likes. Let me ask you this. When you committed, was that even a thing 4 or 5 years ago? When you committed, did you announce on Twitter, or did you have some sort of like commitment graphic or anything like that?
No, that wasn't even a thing. That's like a new age, new era thing.
Mm-hmm. Like now, if you had to do it all over again, would you do it? Would you get into it? Would you go to Dave and be like, hey, get me something? Or
I probably would do it the same way. You know, I'd prove myself when I get here.
Yeah.
That's how I would handle it. You know?
What would you guys, if you had a commitment graphic?
I think
not that any of us have played. I didn't play high school football, much less college.
I think
football.
Graphic limits you. I think a commitment video is the thing that everyone does now.
Yeah, yeah.
But one that sticks out to me is when there were 2 5-star receivers last year. They did a dodgeball game where they had every team that they were considering in it, and they were just pelting the teams that didn't make it with dodgeballs. It's like, I'm not coming to UConn. I'm not coming to Penn State. And then the last team remaining was the team they went to, which I think was like USC or Auburn. But I'll do that. Videos, intense. And wouldn't be like 3 minutes, but 18 minutes long that people just have to watch.
I'm with Sharif. I want something low-key, keep my recruitment. I don't need to blow up my recruitment.
Man Rhule on the Jeff Collins.
After one of the spring practices this year, we were throwing around the football, and then eventually we got yelled at and got chased off the field, right?
Oh, yeah. But, I don't know. Well, you'll have to stay after a training camp practice and watch John throw the ball. He can really sling. You'd be surprised.
Really? Yeah, you know what I have never done? Sling it over an offensive line with anybody rushing at me. I'm sure I'd throw the ball pretty differently. If I was
Well, Sharif, try and rush, and I'll block. How about that?
Yeah, do that.
Yeah, I like that matchup.
Good luck with that one.
Our next question comes from message board. The reader's screen name here is GLMPA. What changes in scheme and approach can you share with regards to new coaching staff, especially defensive coordinator Taylor Johnson and D-line coach Jim Panago? So, again, obviously you can't give away the playbook, but maybe, you know, what he's getting is, like, obviously he played in a hell of a defense for a great coordinator in Phil Snow, yeah. but we hear about the mayhem stuff, mm-hmm. the high-energy stuff. What's the identity of this defense going to be like? And what, you know, is it, again, not getting into the X's and O's, yeah. but what do you like about it? What have you seen so far?
Yeah, I mean, we're keeping the same mantra, you know, the same identity we've always had, and that's being Temple Tough. Mm-hmm. You know, accountability is what we teach in our defense. If everybody's doing their job and in the right spot, then, of course, like, we're going to be able to make our plays, you know. It's not more so you're trying to make a play, you're trying to make your play. That's, like, the focus on our defense, you know. And I mean, transitioning, you know, being that we got a lot of older guys, you know, he wanted to keep some of the same verbiage mm-hmm. in the old scheme, you know. But yeah, we got some good things planned this year. I don't want to give away too much. But, yeah, just being accountable, that's what we do on defense.
Mm-hmm. Next question off the message board comes from North Broad. What younger players have stood out in spring yeah. practice? And just and he said in summer training, I mean, I'm assuming that means, like, even just guys in the weight room. Who are yeah. some of the younger guys that are starting to stand out to you, whether it's on the field or even just the way they're carrying themselves?
Yeah, I would say, I don't know if he's a young guy anymore, but he's going to be a junior this year. Delvon Randall, he's really standing out to me. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a pretty talented guy. Sean Bradley, he's another guy that's standing out on the defense right now. You know, Sean Bradley, Jared Folks, you know, the guys are placing the three seams. Mm-hmm. You know, of course they have to step up, and that's what they've been doing. So I'm happy about that, you know, and just, yeah, pretty much those guys.
How about on the defensive line specifically? Yeah. I mean, obviously you lose praise Ronan Aguike, Hassan yeah. Reddick, probably two of your top pass rushers last year. So yeah. who's kind of stood out to you, I mean, besides yourself, obviously, who's kind of stood out to you on that defensive yeah. line specifically?
I would say, you know, Dan Archibong, he's been playing pretty good. Of course, Quincy Roche and Daniel Levine, they're going to be the other, the DNs next to me and Jacob. You know, and Karamo, yeah, Karamo for sure. So, yeah, those guys, they're going to be great additions to the D-line this year and get a lot of playing time.
Now, flipping the ball, people talk a lot, obviously, about replacing Hassan, replacing yeah. Praise. One of the bigger issues might be replacing Dion. So I just kind of have you seen throughout spring yeah. just offensive linemen that might be sticking up, stepping up.
Yeah, Jalen Robinson, he's probably going to be the main person that replaces Deion. He's a really big, athletic guy, strong guy, so he has great feet. Yeah, I'm pretty happy about his progression. And, of course, Leon Johnson, you know, we're going to get him this year. So, yeah, those guys will probably step up for us.
How have you seen Jalen specifically develop? Because I remember yeah. I remember specifically talking to, on signing day, talking to Mike Sarabo, and he's like, we really got him late. He's a big kid. He's only played 1 year. They were thrilled to get him out of Connecticut. Yeah. And he's like, if he just progresses, mm-hmm. he can be really, really good. And he was really raw when he got here. Do you yeah. remember what he was like when he first got here to what he's like now? What's the difference?
Yeah, he was just a really athletic guy and a raw guy mm-hmm. when he got here. But now he's honed into his skills, into his, you know, his responsibilities. And he's really matured. So him maturing was really big for us. And I think now with the maturity and the time under his belt, mm-hmm. he's going to be a great player.
Another question before we get back to some of the reader ones. I yeah. talked to a couple of the coaches, and they rave about what they've seen so far from Matt Hennessy. And a couple of years ago, yeah. you had everybody was just, you know, really praising. It was really, really high on Kyle Friend. It was just so adorable, so tough. And then you had Brendan McGowan last year. It's been a while, maybe since Kyle was here, since I've heard them get this excited about someone playing center. What have you seen yeah. from Matt so far?
Yeah, Matt Hennessy reminds me a lot of Kyle. Mm-hmm. He's like a really aggressive guy. He's a very disciplined guy, mm-hmm. you know, and he's an extremely athletic guy. Like, he can run. He can outrun DBs at times, you know. Like, Matt Hennessy's he's a pretty good guy, you know. So, yeah, just the aggressiveness, the strength, you know, he's going to be a pretty good center for us this year.
Mm-hmm. Another question from the message board from Chet P. Is Mr. Finch anticipating playing in the pros, and if so, will he be looking forward to his final college season as a chance to show that not only will he make Temple successful, but show he can play at the next level?
Now, I'm just worried about September 2nd right now. I'm taking it one game at a time, and whatever happens after my college season, you know, happens. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm just taking it a game at a time, and God willing, hopefully I get the opportunity.
Just as a follow-up, I mean, you guys have to have that mentality, a game at a time.
Yeah.
How hard is it to do that? I mean, you're human beings, mm-hmm. whether it's like looking ahead to a certain game or, I mean, yeah. it's not unreasonable for you to think that you could play in the NFL. I mean, you don't want to be human if you wouldn't be a human being if you didn't think of that. But how hard is it to literally just, like, whatever cliche you can think of, like, trust the process, you guys yeah. talk about stacking days and all those things. Like, after a while, do you just train your brain to think that way and say, I'm not looking past tomorrow, I'm not looking past that first game?
Yeah, with me, I would say it comes from, like, experience. like my freshman year, if we looked past some guys or if we're worried about something other than the next game, it wouldn't be too good for us, you know. So focusing on each game is how we've been winning. So that's what we're going to stay true to, you know.
Next question comes from JHG722 on the message board. With a lot of seniors graduating on defense, does Sharif feel he has a responsibility to fill a leadership void?
I mean, yeah, we had a couple great leaders leave. You know, every year we have a couple great leaders leave. You know, we had Avery go this year, Tyler Maticavage the previous year, Hassan this year, you know, praise. So, yeah, I mean, I'm stepping right into that role. I mean, I've been a part of that role. Like, since I've been at Temple, I feel like I've just been, like, a little banged up. So I wasn't as, like, pushed to the forefront as others may have been. But yeah, definitely I'll be one of the voices this year.
Who are some of the other guys? I mean, like, and what is that? I mean, you guys probably get this question all the time. Who are the leaders? But, like, who are some of those other guys? And what does that mean to you guys? Because it doesn't always just mean, like, opening your mouth and just yelling at somebody. Who are some of the other guys in the locker room that, like, set somebody straight or just people that others look up to?
Yeah. Of course, it's like an obligation feel when you become a senior. You become an example. You want to have a positive example. Guys like, you know, Jacob Martin, Devon Randall, Champ Chandler, you know, Julian Taylor, like Dogby, you know, the older guys on the defense. For us, we set the standard every play, you know. We set the tempo. So it's like we're basically the role models for the defense, especially with a lot of younger guys coming in playing this year. We have to be that role model, you know. So I'd say we're the leaders on defense. On offense, you know, you got the QB speaking up, of course. You got Raquel Armstead. You got these three great receivers that everybody's talking about. So, yeah, it's a lot of guys right now that are leading.
Is there a guy that Avery, we always, again, we're not in the locker room, but he always made us laugh. I think he told Matt once, he said, I when I put on a uniform, I feel the same way that a little girl does when she puts on makeup for the first time. Like, that was one of his quotes.
Yep, that was
he
the
always
quote,
had, like, some great quotes. Is there, who are some of the other, like, more colorful personalities on the team? Like, is there another guy that kind of, like, fills that role now who's, like, the guy just says stuff in the locker room that kind of cracks everybody up?
I mean, yeah, of course, we got a couple of guys like that. You know, Avery was a special guy. Like, nobody's Avery. But, like, you know, we got young guys like Sam Franklin or, like, you know, Greg. A couple of guys that are, like, get guys riled up and are pretty entertaining guys.
Another question here from the message board from a guy with a screen name, Hootsalot. I stand firm that – this is high praise for you. I stand firm that Finch has the best hands of any defensive lineman in Temple history. Memorable block punts and interceptions. I would be curious to hear – if Sharif attributes his notable success in this area to training in other sports like martial arts, stick'em, elongated fingers, luck, etc. So he's asking, like, yeah, how do you – I know you said you can't give away your secrets, but, like, you have been known for having good hands. Is that something that's natural or is it something that you train yourself to do?
I played slot receiver in high school.
Okay.
So a lot of guys don't know. So I was a receiver. I was recruited as a tight end as well in high school, so I always had pretty good hands. I get it from, like, my brothers, I guess. They have pretty good hands, but I do a lot of jug work. I do a lot of jug work, more than probably any D lineman should do or would do, because I expect to be around the ball. So if I get the opportunity, I want to catch it, you know. So I do a lot of jug work. That's the when they shoot the balls at you and catch them. So yeah.
Take us back a couple last questions for you. When you chose Temple, you had a lot of other schools in Virginia recruiting you. At the time, again, Matt's coming in. What sold you on Temple? Why Temple? What led you to choose Temple?
I mean, I would say the people. You know, Matt Rhule, the players on the team, there's nowhere like Temple, and I firmly believe that, like, the camaraderie in the locker room, everywhere, you know, around the campus, like, it's a very good atmosphere, you know, and if I had to do it again, I would choose Temple again, no matter if I got any offer, I would choose Temple, you know, I love the guys I'm around, and the camaraderie of the locker room is, like, it's something that you're going to cherish for a lifetime.
You mentioned the receivers, we haven't touched on them yet, Ventel and Adonis and Keith Kirkwood. Again, you don't necessarily, like, go up against them in terms of covering them, but they're you know, they had great seasons last year. They're probably among the three best in the league. Looks like all those guys will probably have a chance to play on Sundays too. What have you seen from them? People obviously see them on TV, they know about them, but what can you tell fans and readers about them that they wouldn't know about these guys in terms of how they play, how they prepare?
Yeah, every day in the facility, you'll see them getting 2-3 sessions in extra after we do the things we have to do in the morning, like for workouts. Like, these guys push each other. You know, they're three of the – I think we have one of the best receiving corps in the country. The three of the better receivers in our conference. You know, they got the guy from SMU, but, like, you know, three of the better receivers in our conference, and I believe that. And it's just how they push each other. All of them are talented, so all of them, you know, they're always competing, you know. So, yeah, I'd say the extra work and just the competition is just making them great.
John just brought up Kirkwood. I mean, during the spring, he got some time at defensive end.
What did you
see? I know you were kind of limited during the spring, but what did you see out of him there, and do you think he might be able to help you as another pass rusher like Ramon did last year?
I think, Keith's a big guy, too. He's not that small. He's around right around 230. Mm-hmm. So, like, seeing him out there in the spring, I mean, I taught him a couple things. He was pretty raw at the beginning, but he's a great athlete. So being out there and being able to move around the old tackles like he was, and he was actually productive in the spring, I think he's going to help us this year for sure.
As you get toward the end of your career, what's maybe who was the most notable player that you've gone up against? Whether it was an offensive lineman or even just like a ball carrier you had to bring down. What are some of your memories of playing against some of the best players you've played against?
I would say a really good tackle I went against was Ronnie Stanley of Notre Dame back in 2015. He was the real deal. Mm-hmm. And Donovan Smith at Penn State. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't even know we were going to go against Donovan because he was injured the previous game. And we came out there and we seen this guy like 350, like 6'5", 6'6". And I'm like, who's this guy? You know, and he was a pretty good player. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those two guys. Yeah, those two. Oh, and Teddy Bridgewater. Mm-hmm. Teddy Bridgewater was one of the better players I've ever played against.
Real quick, just a follow-up on that Notre Dame game. That was a really, really good offensive line. And that obviously wasn't like the Penn State game where you guys eventually just hauled off on Hackenberg. But you found different ways to kind of chip away at that line, whether it was sending guys up the middle. Eventually, you picked off Deshaun Kizer and stuff. What was it like going up against that offensive line, against Stanley? Because they were really, really stout. And you guys still found, again, you didn't get 10 sacks against them, but you still found ways to affect the game. What was that like in that atmosphere like? We haven't touched on that Notre Dame game.
I mean, I would compare the atmosphere a lot to Penn State. You know, but these guys are a little bit bigger. And they had the thing that they do good is they work as a unit. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's never just one guy moving and messing up. Everybody's always on the same page. So it's just you have to beat them. Mm-hmm. Like, straight up, you just got to beat them because they're not going to beat themselves. So that was, like, the biggest difference. They're probably one of the more disciplined O-linemen I've ever went against. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's probably why. They're so successful.
Thanks, Sharif, for being with us today. Really appreciate the time. We'll talk to you soon. Okay. Preseason camp starts next week.
Tuesday,
you guys,
right?
Guys report. What did the guys report this weekend? And then
Sunday. We report Sunday.
Okay. 30. All right. Well, thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you down the line.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So some great stuff from Sharif Finch.
Greatest stuff.
Happy that he could join us on The Scoop. We'll of course be talking to him and several other players as preseason camp approaches. As Sharif said, camp starts. I guess the guys report this weekend. Camp starts next Tuesday. So a little bit more to get into with football. And again, obviously, we'll be breaking down as we get into the summer and into August. We'll have a lot of coverage on the site talking about specific position battles, obviously the quarterback position, linebackers. But let's, for a second...
real quick, I wish this was a video podcast so people could see how massive Sharif Finch is compared to the three of us.
Oh, yeah.
A huge human being.
Yeah, and he's definitely gotten noticeably bigger. Even since we saw him last year, he's a monster.
Yeah. Felt fun to talk to him about me throwing the football around.
It could be the three of us pass blocking for just like the ball to be on the ground for like 6 seconds without Sharif catching, we would just be absolutely destroyed. Just one arm.
You would put me on my back in
you should see John throw the ball. I'm like, yeah, you know what I haven't done is throw it with a rush coming
you would
me.
Show up to your primary care physician, they'd be like, Matt, you have the body of someone that's been playing football for 15 years. You say I played one snap.
Just one snap,
that's destroyed me.
Ball talk. I mean, well, first, before we get into camp stuff, let's react to some of the stuff that he said. I mean, what did you guys take away from some of the stuff that Sharif said, whether it was like some of the guys that have caught his eye or just his approach to the game or anything that he just talked to us about?
One of the things that stuck out to me was just kind of when he's rattling off people that stuck out or paid attention or have made improvements or become leaders. When he started rattling names off on the defensive line, kind of internally, I was like, well, this line might actually be better than people are giving it credit for.
Yeah.
A lot of people keep saying, obviously, like, you're losing a guy, and Hassan Reddick was a top 15 pick. You're losing a guy, and Praise Martin Guike might stick with the Dolphins. You're losing two NFL defensive end. There's some decent amount of talent returning on that team.
Right.
Sharif Finch has, when he's been healthy, has shown a lot of flashes. Jacob Martin started a lot of games, started for him as a true freshman. Defensive tackle, you have Karamo, you have Greg Webb, you have... I don't think I've ever mentioned Julian Taylor's name in 3 years, but he's a guy that's played some football. So I feel like the real question mark, just even after talking to him, and he had mentioned this, still just ends up being the linebackers on this defense. Mm-hmm. If they get production out of that linebacking core, then this could be another pretty good type of defense.
Yeah, and he also mentioned, too, he said, obviously, Quincy Roche, Dana Levine, he said, well, he pretty much said they're going to be the backups. So I think this might be, you know, a situation where, okay, you're not going to have 10.5 sacks coming from one guy. It's going to be... You know, maybe four coming from this guy. And he also said, too, he's like, we've got some, more or less, we've got some special stuff worked up, which I would imagine to mean that with this whole havoc approach, they're just, you know, it's bringing pressure from all sorts of angles,
right.
Blitzing linebackers, blitzing corners, causing disruption wherever they can because they don't maybe necessarily have, you know, right now, at the end of July, we can't say with an absolute degree of certainty, like, okay, we know there's the next Hassan Reddick. Like, Michael Dogby's going to be good for 12 sacks, or Sharif Finch is going to be good for 11 sacks.
Right.
Maybe they will. We don't know. But I think it's going to be something like that where the pressure's just going to come from all over the place.
I think the exact phrase he even used was, like, they'll be the defensive ends next to Jacob and I. Not
right.
Meaning, like, all formation-wise they're going to be lining up
mm-hmm.
six defensive linemen. But those are two guys, mm-hmm. Quincy Roche and Dane Levine, that are probably, like, 225.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be backing up or spelling two pretty big defensive ends in Jacob
right.
Martin and Sharif Finch. So that should add an extra element of speed to that team.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a quick sideways, I love the fact they said Matt Hennessy can outrun defensive backs.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, really?
Yeah. And he's like, he reminds me a lot of Kyle. Kyle Friend wasn't a guy that was necessarily outrunning defensive backs.
He's just very strong.
But yeah, very strong, very tough. And he mentioned Sean Bradley, too, whose name keeps coming up, who could, I guess, potentially... Now, he's played in the middle, and again, if you ask Jeff Collins about this and you say, is Jared Falk going to be your guy in the middle? And Jeff's response is typically, is like, well, you've seen, we get into position flexibility, guys get reps all over the place. If Jared Falk ends up being your starting middle linebacker, then maybe Bradley's he's on the strong side or weak side. But his name keeps coming up
mm-hmm.
as a guy, again, we've mentioned this before, he was kind of, not an afterthought, but not a guy that was highly recruited at Rancocas Valley, comes in as a defensive back and is really... turned into a specimen of a player. Is that the biggest, maybe the, obviously, when we'll get into the quarterback position in a second, because that's obviously the big one that everyone focuses in on, but after quarterback, it's got to be linebacker, right? Where you've got basically three new starters there. Is that the most important position that maybe people aren't talking about as much?
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at what happened in the spring. You had Chappelle Russell and Jared Folks both sit out. I mean, those are two guys that have some experience. I mean, this is Chappelle Russell's third year in the program, and Jared Folks is going to be a senior. So, you look at everything. You look at the situation with linebackers. I mean, they're pretty young and inexperienced. They don't have a lot of guys who have played much football. So, I mean... For me, that's probably the most intriguing spot besides quarterback. I think I like that some of that athleticism that they have with Sam Franklin, Isaiah Grant Mobley. Obviously, we mentioned Russell already and Sean Bradley. I mean, they have a lot of speed there and a lot of athleticism. Obviously, they're lacking in size maybe a little bit, but I think it's probably the most intriguing spot besides quarterback. I think we'll talk a lot about it over the course of the next month or so. We talked a lot about it in the spring, but for us, I mean, this is going to be the coaching staff's first true look at Chappelle Russell on the field
mm-hmm.
in a practice setting. It's going to be the first look that they're going to get at Jared Folks too. So I mean, both of those guys are going to have to make impressions on the new staff. And both of those guys, you know, Jared Folk started about half the games last year at middle linebacker, so the expectation is probably going to be for him to come in and slide in somewhere. But I mean. You're gonna hope that probably Folks continues to show you something, and then it's kind of up in the air with all the other spots, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, which I guess is similar because it's the quarterback of the defense, right? The
mm-hmm.
linebacker, it's the comparison of the quarterback of the offense too, in the sense that there's three spots you can look. You can probably say, okay, of these six guys, I know these three are going to be starters. Who are those three going to be? I don't know. You don't
mm-hmm.
know. Yeah, like you said, I assume Jared Folks is going to be. On quarterback, you can say, okay, it's going to be one of these four guys. Linebackers, the only solace you can kind of take with it is Folks has started some games. Russell's played some games. Granted, he never really started.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Bradley's shown flashes. So at least you can kind of say, okay, maybe they rely on these guys until the rest of them come up on it. And I'm wondering, we kind of always assume that this is going to be a 4-3 defense.
I was just going to say that. They can give you some 4-4 looks and mix stuff up.
They could. I mean, it could be like the Eagles, where the Eagles basically start two linebackers and they play nickel 95% of the time.
Right.
We don't know. Like, this defense could be, they could come out against Notre Dame looking completely off. And nothing like a Phil Snow defense.
Right, which is, I'm sure, again, but and I think we've said this before, if I'm one of the new coaches, I don't really put myself in a box either and say, it's going to be this way, it's going to be that way, I think this kid's going to do this. You're probably going to hear, again, we're going to be multiple, we're going to have guys sliding in and out of positions. A guy like Jeremiah Itoki, he could be a safety, he could be a linebacker, we could slide this guy back into coverage, we could do this, we could do that. If we're going on the road against Notre Dame, we got to give them a bunch of different looks on the road. And so, you're right, who knows? I mean, they could, you know, every once in a while, you'll hear a recruit or you'll hear somebody say, like, hey, they like to, you know, I think one of the recruits recently said, like, yeah, they like to, you know, the coaches said they might give some 4-4 looks or something like that. So who knows, you know, who knows what they're going to line up with, and they're going to try to be multiple. But, you know, they do have a lot of, like Matt said, they do have a lot of intriguing possibilities at linebacker. We've talked before about how Phil Snow would say, yeah, you know, I like Tyler, I liked Avery, I like Stephon Marshall, but I don't know if I would have recruited them over again because they were shorter guys. These guys are taller, like you said, maybe not quite as big, but the athleticism is there. The question is, like, who's gonna put it together? But it's gonna be a relatively untested group, minus Folks. Chappelle Russell came in with wasn't a super highly recruited guy, but, you know, with a decent amount of potential. He was out in the spring. There's Kwanku, there's Sam Franklin, Isaiah Graham Mobley, like you said. I mean, I think that's going to be a really, really interesting position to watch. In the first couple weeks, I know, I think, you know, they'll say, well, maybe that wasn't the first team out there, but I'll be interested in what we can see of practice in the last 15, 20 minutes. If you see what looks like the first team defense, who's lining up there? Is it going to be Sean Bradley in the middle? Is it going to be Folks in the middle? That's going to be obviously a big position to watch.
Baylor signed 4 linebackers last year, 6'6", 6'3", 6'1", 6'2". A little bit longer than Avery Williams.
Yeah.
6'6 linebacker.
It's a big guy.
It's fun.
And then obviously there's the quarterback position. And again, I think Jeff mentioned last week during media day that, you know, of course, eventually they're going to have to pare things down, and you're not going to be giving 4 guys reps a week leading into the Notre Dame game. It's speculation at this point, but, I mean, how do you see it? How do you see it playing out?
We're kind of talking a little bit off the air. Just, I'll say this. I will be shocked if, against Notre Dame, it's a redshirt freshman or a true freshman out there at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's down to Logan Marchi and Frank Neutile, not necessarily in the sense of who's going to be starting the most games this year, but who's going to be starting for Notre Dame. I think it just conventional wisdom, gut feeling tells you start somebody that has something resembling experience. That being said, if it's Frank Neutile, if it's Logan Marchi, if it's John DiCarlo, goes out there and does not play well against Notre Dame, I think the way the schedule is set up after that kind of helps them in the sense they're going to come back, they're going to play a pretty good FCS team. If the last Mayor's Cups are any indication, there should be a significant talent difference between
the
Temple
Jim
and
Kenny
Villanova.
Soda Tax Cup.
I like that.
Each point will now be worth 6%.
Sweetened drinks at the Link will be $9 now.
And then even after that, they
political humor.
Even after that, they host UMass, a pretty bad FBS team. So I think with those two games, you'll kind of see. I assume they're going to redshirt Todd Santayo unless something drastic happens. I think of those two subsequent games, I think you see Frank Neutile, Logan Marchi, Anthony Russo all play a significant amount of football, and I think when you're really going to realize who the going-forward quarterback is going to be, you know, week 4 against South Florida, it's going to be week 5 against Houston, week 6 against East Carolina. I don't think the first 3 games are going to necessarily slam the book shut unless whatever junior they choose goes out and looks like Joe Montana against Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see it playing out the way Kyle does. Conventional wisdom would say they're going to have to go with a guy who has some experience, who's been in the program for, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, something like that. So I think it'll, for Notre Dame, I think it's going to be Neutile. I think it's going to be Marchi. I lean towards Marchi still at this point, but, you know, it's July, and we'll see what happens when training camp rolls around. I mean, I think you look at what Russo did towards the end of the spring ball, and that kind of makes me a little bit hesitant to totally count him out, just because, you know, he seemed to come on a little bit towards the end. He had a pretty decent spring game. I mean, obviously, Senteo, I think talent-wise, you know, I think he might have the most talent of all four guys. However, are they going to put a true freshman out there against Notre Dame? I highly doubt it. But I would not rule out the idea of Senteo coming in as a guy. If they were to start Nuttall, I think they'd maybe use Senteo or use Marchie as a guy who can come in and run the ball, because I think at Dave Patton's offense, they're gonna run the ball with the quarterback a little bit. Mm-hmm. Probably, if it's Nuttall, I think they're going to have to bring somebody else in to do that at times. So, you know, I'm not totally sold that Senteo redshirts, but my money would be on, obviously, one of the veteran guys to go out there against Notre Dame. And then I think things could get dicey after that with the way the schedule lines up. I think at Nova you could probably see two or three quarterbacks play if things go as planned. So, you know, my money for Notre Dame is on Marchie or Nuttall, but after that I think it could get a little bit murky.
You know, I think I've said this before. I think I probably counted out Frank, and then he played well at the end of the spring, and I don't think Logan played as well at the end of the spring. But that's not to say that Logan couldn't come back and look great in the first couple weeks of August. And if he does, if you consistently hear Logan has great command of the offense, Logan this, Logan that, then he's probably, you know, going to be your starter. The only other scenario, and I think you guys are spot on, I could see it playing out that way. The only other interesting scenario would be if they fall behind badly in the first half, and it's like they go into the halftime down like 28-0, and if there is a guy, whether it's Russo, whether it's Senteo, like does Jeff and Dave Patton who get together in third quarter, Anthony Russo, it's your you take the second half. You get some, we're out of it. Not that they would probably say it this way, we're out of it. Second half is yours. Let's see what you can do.
I think he'd be hesitant to do that with Todd Senteo, because when that happens, he goes out there, he struggles. All of a sudden, you say, oh, crap, it's way too early, and we kind of burnt this kid's red shirt.
Yeah.
Well, on one side of it, yeah, you could look at it that way. Another side of it, I mean, what could happen? Him. Yeah, what if he comes out and kind of lights it up a little bit like PJ did against Louisville, right?
Okay. Well, like, so, first he did against Fordham. So they played him one series against Fordham. He looked terrible.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And
that's right.
At the time, not to name names, there was somebody else in the press box, and like, oh, they burnt this kid's red shirt for no reason, and like, Rule doesn't know what he's doing. Walker went on to go play the rest of the year. So I think the whole rationale was, if you're going to do it, you have to commit to playing that kid. Otherwise, you're doing him a disservice, and you're probably doing the program a disservice by taking away a year.
Yeah, you don't want to pull a Bob Diaco and put in a freshman quarterback and then the eighth game.
Bobby Red Pants Diaco.
And then Randy Ansel comes in. Now he has to worry about that kid's a sophomore. The kid's like in a competition for the gig. So he might not even be a starting quarterback for that program now. Mm-hmm. Randy facing state charges, Ansel.
Nepotism.
You're apparently not allowed to just hire your son without interviewing other candidates. It's crazy how that works.
Yeah. Maybe your pick for somebody who is going to surprise in camp over the next 4 weeks.
Surprising in a good way? Surprises can be bad. I don't like to be surprised sometimes. Surprise parties, not all about it.
I don't think I've ever had a surprise party. My dad ruined, last year Chelsea was going to try to throw a surprise party for me. Couldn't quite get the logistics down, but then was going to try to do something a little bit later in the summer, and my dad blew it.
None of that surprises me.
No. Nope.
I'm surprised he ain't ready.
Hearing about your dad, that does not surprise me. But I'll give mine. I came up with something.
So, I cooked something up while we were talking about my dad.
I mean, I lean towards, I think, the cornerback situation. We haven't talked a ton about it, but with Nate Harrison gone, there's some uncertainty there. I think some of those spots are up for grabs, even though Mike Jones is coming in as a grad transfer. So I think Linwood Crump is going to – I know we've talked about him a little bit during the spring, and he's come up by some of the coaches that brought him up, but I think he's going to be one of the guys that really stands out. I mean, he played last year a little bit as a true freshman. I mean, he's lightning fast, and I think he brings something to the table that really – they don't have a cornerback as fast as him. I don't think they have a cornerback maybe as purely talented as him. You know, I think he's going to be, maybe he won't be the guy who starts as a boundary corner against Notre Dame because of his inexperience in game situations, but I really think he's going to be a name that comes out and the coaches are going to talk about a lot, because I just think he's too talented and too fast not to stand out.
Yeah, I think that's a good choice. I'll do two, one of which isn't really huge because he started last year. I think, kind of talking about what Shugreef did, I think Delvon Randall takes that next step. I think he's gone from a guy that There was initially recruited as a wide receiver. They didn't overtake him. He goes to prep school. He comes in. He starts as a sophomore. I think he's going to form one of the better safety tandems in this conference. Mm-hmm. The one that I think is going to surprise me won't necessarily surprise people that have kind of projected the depth chart. I think Kenny Yeboah is going to stand out.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kenny Yeboah brings an extra dimension to that tight end position. He was an all-state wide receiver. He had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons as a wide receiver at Parkland. I think he has the athleticism to really actually be a vertical threat, which is something that they haven't had since Kip Patton.
It's a very good point. And at tight end, I mean, they're going to be looking to replace Colin Thompson and Romain Deloach, so they need a receiving tight end and a blocking tight end. Maybe Steve Petrick as well is a name I'll throw in there.
Chris Meyerick will probably be in that equation as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we kind of we had a conversation going on the message boards about this yesterday. I don't know. It's not to say, you know, Yeboah could definitely be a guy that gets down the field on some seam routes and stuff like that because he can go up and get the ball. He's definitely not slow. He's athletic. But if you do, in any way, shape, or form, you're going to be bringing along a new quarterback. And not that he's, I mean, who knows? I don't anticipate that every route he's going to run is going to be 5 yards out, turn around, give me the ball. But he could be available for some dump off stuff, and maybe he will be an outlet, you know, like a safety valve for the quarterback. The one guy, and this is, I don't want to say this is like a complete reach, but we keep talking about Adonis, Keith Kirkwood, and Ventel. So we obviously have like three receivers who are going to get the bulk of the catches. I still think somebody like, I could see someone like Freddie Johnson emerging.
Yeah.
You know, like there's going to be, I mean, pretty much everybody spreads the ball around now. We know what we're getting in those three receivers. I think one of these other receivers will emerge, and we're going to be like, you know, and then the line will be like, hey, we're not just, it's not just these three guys. You know, Freddie's fast. Randall Jones. I could see one of those guys emerging, and again, you don't know, you know, if somebody isn't healthy, one of those guys will have to step up. I think there's a receiver that's going to step up this year and really give them another dimension, and then they can talk about, oh, we have even more depth than people think. So I could see a guy like Freddie Johnson coming around.
And with Jihad out of the mix, you know, you're going to be looking for a guy to return punts and kicks. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, Randall Jones could fit that bill, and same goes for Freddie Johnson too.
We asked on the board who's going to be the best redshirt freshman this year. Not to put too much focus on a class that maybe people thought was a little underwhelming. Who has the best chance of contributing as a true freshman in this class? What do you think? I guess Todd Zintel might be a natural answer because he's been around. Guy that sticks out to me is a guy that could be on your side of the ball. He's going to start on the defensive end. I think Malik Burns has a chance to carve out a rotational spot as a pass rushing defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Burns probably physically looks the part as far as a freshman goes. I mean, I think he's further along than probably most of the freshmen in this class.
Also, I actually do like pretty much their entire defensive line class, even though the two at the end with Ebiketie and Afani Maje, they ended up flipping from FCS programs. I think both those guys have the skill set to eventually end up being good defensive linemen at this conference. I don't think it'll be this year.
Right. Yeah, I would think Burns seems to be, you know, just based off of what people tell you, he seems to be the most physically ready guy. I mean, he would probably be my pick. And again, I think we've talked about this before. If most of these guys redshirt, that's not, you know, fans tend to think, I think some fans are still stuck in that mentality of like 2006, 2007, 2008, you got to play freshman right away. If they don't play, they're bust. No, I think if the staff had its druthers, they would redshirt most of these players and become this quote-unquote developmental program, which is really what they've been, you know, bringing guys along, because you see how many redshirt freshmen are ready to contribute now, whether it's Hennessy, whether it's Yeboah, whether it's Petrick. Burns will probably be my choice too, just because of how, you know, physically ready he looks. But again, not to jinx them, we'll see how healthy they are. And, you know, it could be a situation where it's like week six and they have a couple of injuries at spots, and then one of those true freshmen comes along and they say, hey, he's just too good to keep off the field at this
same
point.
Same vein that you mentioned, Freddie Johnson and Randall Jones. Assuming that Jeremy Jennings enrolls this next month, it could be Jeremy Jennings at wide receiver.
Yeah.
He'll bring that all-state speed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they could look for return help, too, and maybe Jennings gets a chance like Randall Jones did last year as a true freshman. Maybe that opportunity comes about for Jennings if he makes it. So, and another name I guess I'll throw out there, although I think it's going to be really tough for him to find playing time with a crowded cornerback group, But I think Ty Basin might be an interesting mm-hmm. an interesting guy there. I think you with all these true freshmen, I really have low expectations for this class as far as, you know, an immediate impact. But especially just with the depth that they have at most positions, I don't really see too many freshmen coming in and playing much, if at all. But Ty Mason might be a guy that could find some time eventually, especially as the season goes on.
It could be the preferred walk-on punter from Downingtown.
Yeah, it could be Connor Holder? Connor Bowler.
Yeah.
Connor Bowler, preferred walk-on from Downingtown West. Assuming I think we're all working on the assumption that Alex Starzik will be back in camp.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's not, could be the whipped pride.
Well, that'll do it for this week. Again, thank you to our readers on the message boards and on Twitter for sending them some questions to Sheree Finch. Big thank you to Sheree Finch for joining us this week on The Scoop. We'll be back with you pretty soon to get into preseason camp. We'll talk a little bit of basketball next time around as the live period wraps up. We'll talk about some of the recruiting targets from the basketball team. And thanks again for listening, and we will talk to you guys soon.